This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. Later in today's show, will your car be smarter than you someday? It could be with the latest technology. Also, a new 911 connected app is helping to save lives. First up this afternoon, the Woman City Club of Greater Cincinnati is celebrating its 100th anniversary this year. Joining us to look at the history of the club and the contributions it's made to the growth and direction of the city are Woman's City Club President Susan Noonan, past President Dot Christensen, club member Janet Buning, and Dan Hurley, local historian with the Cincinnati USA Regional Chamber. And Susan, Dot, Janet, and Dan, thanks everybody for joining us this afternoon. Much appreciated.
Thank you.
It's a pleasure to be here.
If you'd like to join our conversation, the phone number is 513-419-7100. You can email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. And Dot, the Woman City Club has a long, impressive history, and it's involved a lot of civic and social issues through the years. Tell us about how and why the organization got its start.
Well, it got started even before women had the vote, and there wasn't much of a role where women had any public voice, if you will. And they were very concerned about the housing conditions in the old West End, where there were slums and outdoor toilets and all the rest of it. And they put an ad in the paper. There were about 10 women who put an ad in the paper to see if others were interested in organizing a club to begin to look at these issues. 200 people responded to that. And the first project they undertook was a door-to-door survey of the, not all 80,000, but there were 80,000 people living in the West End in about 20,000 units, all of which were substandard. And they became very active in housing issues and health issues. They started the Better Housing League in 1918 to teach people housekeeping and if they were able, how to buy a house. They were instrumental in establishing the Cincinnati Metropolitan Housing Authority, which was the second of its kind in the country to be more than one just boundary just outside the city. And they did a lot on city planning. They got the state law changed so that there could be citizen involvement in city planning. All of this before 1920 when they got the vote.
I think it's interesting. They had 1,500 members by the first anniversary of the club.
So they started with 200, and they had that much growth to 1,500 within
one year.
That is amazing.
It was a time when women had no power, so to speak. And I love to tell a story that Louise Spiegel, our longtime member, tells about the fact that the women would go home at night and tell their husbands who worked in the city what needed to be done. And the next day, their husbands would go into City Hall or wherever they worked, and they would say, okay, this is what we need to do. So Louise calls it pillow talk. And that was how women first started with their influence of the city government.
Dan, this is a group that that can claim Marion Spencer, Bobby Stern, Francie Pepper as members. From what I understand, Theodore Barry would call the club for advice on human relations issues. This is and continues to be an influential group. What are some of the other examples of city issues that the Woman City Club has had an impact on during its history?
Well, I think there's a whole host of those specific issues, which Dot was sort of outlining very quickly. I think the important thing to remember here is that women had been active for a long period of time. The problem was, or the problem as they perceived it was, that they didn't have the sort of direct influence, and whether it's pillow talk or the lack of a vote or however, you want to talk about that. Women wanted to be involved in the heart of what was happening in the city. Now, remember that they're founded in 1915, right after World War I. The Cincinnatus organization is founded, and that begins to talk about some of the same issues that Women's City Club is concerned about in terms of reform of the city, proper governance, voting patterns, all of that. So they're really wanting to be on the front edge of almost every urban issue from the beginning in 1915 until today, right down through the rise of the sustainability movement, the environmental movement. You can point to the case of the leadership of Women's City Club in convincing the Cincinnati Public Schools to adopt a LEED standards for its new schools when it began to rebuild every school in the system. So it's across the board and across their history.
Wasn't the club set up initially to mirror city council in some respects?
Well, there were committees set up mm-hmm. to track every department in the city. And you got to remember, at the time that they were set up, this was not a well-run city. And that's putting it gently. And they were there to begin to shine a light in a systematic way on all the specific areas that the city government had responsibility for and affected the day-to-day lives of hundreds of thousands of people.
There was the Women's City Club members were either active in the Charter Committee of Cincinnati or their husbands were, and the Charter Committee was one of the few that was open to women and Avenue. And the Women's City Club at the time Cincinnati was organized was men only, and we were women only to start with. But the Women's City Club was very early and very concerned about including African-American women. And when you mentioned Ted Berry, Johnny Mayberry was one of the first African-American women to join the club, she along with Marion Spencer, in the late 40s. And it was one of the first clubs in town that opened its membership. In fact, it was so controversial at the time, there used to be a junior division. And when you turned 35, then you were supposed to join the senior division of the club. And this was so controversial about integrating the club that the junior division withdrew and canceled itself out. They did not want to open in 1940 or so.
In 1927, actually, Women's City Club started their race relations committee way before many other people were even thinking about it. And then in 1941, the Women's City Club sponsored annual interracial dinners with the University of Cincinnati Student Union. So we were continually trying to do things to bring diversity into the club because we believed in equality from the beginning.
Dan, are there similar groups in other cities, or is this one pretty unique?
Well, one of the things to say in terms of the founding, they were benchmarking themselves off of similar clubs that had been recently established both in Boston and Chicago. And in fact, they brought some of the leaders, particularly of the Chicago club, to Cincinnati to speak about their experience. So, you know, we got to, in local history, you ought to always be careful about that first, biggest, best phrase. So this wasn't the first, but it's on the cutting edge, it's on the front edge of this kind of movement.
At one point, we had reciprocal arrangements with 29 other Women's City Clubs across the country. And the reciprocity was, back in that day, clubs, men's clubs and women's clubs, had a house or an office or place. And we actually owned a building on Lytle Park where people could come and meet and have public meetings and that sort of thing. And there were overnight accommodations. And so if we were in Cleveland or San Francisco and you were a member of the Women's City Club, you could stay at their facility in reciprocity. Or if someone coming from out of town who was a member of their Women's City Club could stay at our Women's City Club. We lost the house when they redid I-71 when they built the highway. But it was the Women's City Club who was responsible for having the tunnel under Lytle Park to preserve Lytle Park, because that was slated to go, along with the house that we owned and a few other buildings. And Lytle Park is there because the Women's City Club organized the North Lytle Park Association and went down to City Council and the City Department, Transportation Department, and every place else to make sure we saved the park.
Susan, what is the mission and the vision of the Women's City Club? How do you define that?
Well, our mission is to educate, empower, and engage the citizens of Greater Cincinnati to participate together in promoting the common good. We have begun collaborating extensively with other agencies, knowing that that will give us a stronger voice in the community. We believe strongly in a civic voice. There is a very strong corporate voice in our city. We don't believe there is a very strong civic voice. So the Women City Club has been in the lead of a committee that's trying to get civic engagement accepted by the city of Cincinnati through a plan that they developed, CEAT, Civic Engagement Action Team. So, Janet, why don't you talk a little bit about our vision?
Oh, our vision? Our vision is basically, and I'm paraphrasing because I don't have it memorized, Susan, but to build a fairer, more just, and more inclusive community for everybody. And we are called a city club, but we really do respond to initiatives throughout the greater Cincinnati area. Susan, for example, lives in Westchester, not in the city, but she is incredibly active in this group because we all realize that what starts here in City Hall spreads outward, but also that what happens in the larger community affects everyone who lives here. So some of the initiatives that we've been involved in lately, in addition to, as Dan mentioned, that the initiative to get the green schools established, we've been very hands-on, even like in local schools, doing a tutoring program that's been kind of a cutting-edge way of working one-on-one with the kids and making a difference in their lives. We do things like that, and we've going back to the early 2000s, we were very involved in the collaborative agreement at a time when our city was plagued by the racial riots. We really worked hard to be part of that endeavor to get people to come to the table and talk about the issues and the problems. And I think that really, when you ask about our vision still is really, in simplest terms, to do that, to get people to come together and learn and be educated, talk about the issues and act on them.
I might mention that after the city had their race problems in 2001, I think it was, we had national speakers come every year, and we had Barbara Ehrenreich scheduled to come. And it was when the boycott was happening and picketers had said they would be there. She refused to come because she did not want to go through the picket line. We got a lot of pressure from some groups to move outside the city, other groups to stay in the city. We decided, thanks to our president, Ruth Kronenberg at the time, that we would have our forum, our National Speakers Forum, at the Plum Street Temple. We brought together a panel of people from the collaborative agreement, and that's what the program was on. We invited the Black United Front, everybody who had been involved in working on that, and had a panel discussion. People went through the picketers. I had my husband and a few other guys helping the little old ladies walk through the picketers, and it was a successful event. So,
how many members do you currently have, Susan?
We have about 250 right now, and that's up from maybe 146 3 years ago. So we're back in a cycle. The cycles go up and down, and I think a lot of it has to do with program content, where women are in their lives. There are so many other organizations now that they did not used to be that also work on civic issues. So we're really happy that our membership is increasing and that we're doing programs that are really contemporary and relevant.
And we're really active. Oh, Dan?
Let's Dan, go ahead, and then we'll.
The amazing thing about this is that this organization is still here 100 years after its founding. You can talk about ups and downs of membership numbers, but think about what this last century has meant in terms of the transformation of the role and consciousness of American women and their relationship to American society. The fact that a single organization has been able to steer through the various phases of the suffrage movement, feminism, women's power movements, the entry of millions of women into the workforce who are no longer, they don't have, they're not just at home looking for purposeful things to do in outside the home, but they are part of the business community. It is amazing that this organization has survived. I don't care what the numbers are. And if anybody's familiar with Robert Putnam's book about bowling alone, literally millions of civic organizations have simply disappeared from the fabric of American society. And if this one has survived, it says something about its effectiveness.
Thank you, Dan.
Well, and we've survived, I think. Dan, wonderful lead into what I wanted to say, Dan, is that we've survived because though we're tremendously proud of our past, we're very keenly aware of the current challenges. And our board has always taken a good hard look at what's working, what isn't working, what needs to change. And we have specifically reached out to other groups, as Susan mentioned, the collaborations, but also to get new members in. We currently have a program called Act One that we are doing in conjunction with the League of Women Voters. And this is aimed at young professionals, I think up to age 35, 18 to 35, to invite them in for free membership in both groups for a year. And part of our mission to engage and empower and educate, get the younger people involved, show them what the opportunities are, help them find their voice in the community. So we really are actively and aggressively working to build membership always.
We'll continue our conversation about the Woman City Club of Greater Cincinnati after the break. You can join the conversation at 513-419-7100. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. We're talking about the history and contributions of the Woman's City Club of Greater Cincinnati with Club President Susan Noonan, Past President Dot Christensen, Club Member Janet Buning, and Dan Hurley, local historian with the Cincinnati USA Regional Chamber. You can join our conversation, 513-419-7100. You can email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. Dan, from a historical perspective, I guess it's safe to say that this has been a very, very influential group in Cincinnati's history, hasn't it?
Well, I think, yes, you can say that. I mean, that's the bottom line. The interesting thing to me is to see how an organization like this, in this case, Women's City Club, how they interact and collaborate with lots of other organizations to get things done. You know, no one organization is the organization that redefines the city, any city. And it is when you read the history of Women's City Club, it's their constant willingness to reach out, to partner, to listen to, and act with other organizations that I think makes them influential.
Janet, go ahead. You wanted to add on to that?
I was just going to say, if anybody wants to know more about the history of our club, one of the things this group has been astoundingly good at is keeping good records. We have a book that came out in 1986 called Leading the Way that is no longer in print but available at the library. It covers our history from 1915 up to 1965. And we have a book coming out literally this weekend in time for the gala called Lighting the Fire, Leading the Way, that covers our history from 1965 until present. And it's a very detailed look, not just at what our club does, but in the context of the overview of the women's movement locally and nationally.
Susan, Janet mentioned the gala that's coming up this weekend. Tell me all about this. This is a very big event. It should be, because you're hitting 100 years.
It is. We are so excited to be 100 years old that we are going all out. We're having this event at the Hilton Netherland Plaza. I always get that name wrong. In the Hall of Mirrors. And Michelle Scheer, who is a general manager, has even bought a table for our event because they're excited. We are going to have Muse singers starting off the event with beautiful songs about women. We will have a video that highlights 12 or 15 of our longtime members, such as Marion Spencer, Louise Spiegel, Dot, and a few others. We will have Dan Hurley, who, of course, is your local historian, speaking on our role as a club and how we interact with the city and with the national movement. We have myself talking a little bit about the future. And then we have Elements doing their wonderful hip-hop dances for the last 15 minutes of the program. So we're really excited. Some of the honorary hosts that we have, you can see our influence, because we have people from the head of the mosque in Westchester, Shaquille Ahmad, to Dr. Owens, Donna Jones Baker. We have 34 different honorary hosts, and it's just a wonderful list of people. Mary Ronan, because we're very involved in education. So we are, what can I say? We're excited. We have 32 tables sold. We're still selling seats. So it will be a packed room, and it should be so exciting.
I wanted to follow up on Dan's comment about collaboration. We've always collaborated with a lot of other groups, but back in the 80s, we've always been interested in housing, an issue about whether or not the state could provide money for subsidized housing or for public housing or anything of that sort, went all the way to the Ohio Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court said that housing was not in the Constitution, it was not stated as a public purpose. And within a week, the Housing Committee of the Women's City Club said, well, then we need to change the Constitution. And it took 2.5 years, and we were very influential in getting the United Way to hire a collaborator, Margie Waller, who got all of the League of Women Voters across the state and the other Women's City Club of Cleveland and all that. It took 3 years, but in 1989, it was issue one on the ballot, and we changed the Constitution.
That is quite an accomplishment. 513-419-7100 to join the conversation. Let's talk with Jim in Hyde Park. Good afternoon, Jim. You're on Cincinnati Edition.
Hi, can you hear me?
Sure can.
Yeah, I am Jim Metzger. That's my name. I don't expect the women now to remember it, but I'm now 80 years old. I was the first man elected to the board of the Women's City Club back in the day, before obviously there were any men on the board, and I was asked, because I was very active when they used to meet over at the Vernon Manor and all over that place, and the women on your committee may remember those, although they're not as old as I am. And I was very proud to be the only man sitting at a board meeting. I learned firsthand what a minority feels like. And I learned also, being a former preacher, I'm a clergyman still, but I had to keep my mouth shut, which is very difficult for me, as you might guess from my talking. But I learned women's issues firsthand, and I'm telling you, that's back in the day of Janet Duff, Barbara Lewis, Pat Dim, and all the older members, some of whom are now gone, but it was one of the great experiences of my life. And I want you to know who else they asked and who they decided to run. I was asked to run, and I said, well, get somebody else. I'll never win. They said, oh, you may win. Charles Taft was the other man they asked, and he had too much on his plate. So I didn't know about this weekend. I'm going to be away. I can't come, or hell, I come, but I can't bring that to the And there was an editorial in the Cincinnati Enquirer, which was a great headline: "Local Man Elected to Girls Friday Club."
Oh. Hey, Jim.
That was the name of the damn editorial in the Enquirer. And Jim, I called them up and raised hell. I said, "Who does it?" Well, they had a headline.
Jim, we appreciate the call very, very much.
We do have a man on the board right now.
Do we?
Okay. I would like to let Jim know we do have a gentleman on our board, and we are encouraging men to join.
Well, April 23rd, Susan, is another event that you have coming up. That's your 22nd annual National Speaker Forum. Now, tell us about that. Who's going to be the speaker, and what is the message of that?
Because we are trying to stay relevant with issues that are so important today, we are having a national speaker to highlight mental health and some of its issues. Mariel Hemingway, whom those of us who are a little bit older have heard of. She was, you know, a model and actress, and she's also an author. And she will be here on April 23rd at the Music Hall Ballroom to speak on mental health issues. She, of course, has had 7 suicides in her own family, including her grandfather, Ernest, and her sister, Margot. So we're really excited about that.
Dan, let's ask you to be a reverse historian for just a moment here. What do you think is the history of the Women's City Club in the next, say, 100 years?
Well, historians dodge that question all the time. Because
we're not going to let you do that.
But I would say that if you read the new volume that's coming out at the end of this week by Rachel Powell, Lighting the Fire, Leading the Way, what you'll find is that the Women's City Club has traversed the era of feminism in a very interesting way and found a way to stay relevant. If it can do that in the last 50 years, and I'm sure that what this organization has, especially with its regional focus that was being talked about earlier, because it's not about the city anymore, it's about the metro. Everything is about the region, economically, socially, environmentally. I think there's no way this club ceases to be important. It will just continue to find a way to have an influence.
Doc, did you want to add something in?
Well, I've often been around when Marion Spencer's around. She speaks for us and was on another program recently. And she said she joined the Women's City Club because they worked for change. And they helped her in integrating Coney Island in the early 1950s. They worked with her on suing the school board about integration in the 1970s. And she said they're always changing, and we have to adapt to change. And it's wonderful to hear that from Marion, who's 94 and a half years old.
So plenty in the future that's going to keep you going, right,
yes,
Susan?
Yes, absolutely.
Yes.
I think so. One of the projects I've been working on for the centennial, in addition to helping with the history book, is a cookbook. And when I was first approached, I'm thinking, oh, yes, the world needs another club cookbook, doesn't it? But when we saw the vision of that, it's really a history book with recipes in it. And the reason we did it, in 1917, when the United States got into World War I, there was a huge need to learn how to cook differently because of the rationing and the shortages. So the club, our Women's City Club and those across the country issued a Liberty cookbook to help people deal with that, with Mr. Hoover's chart of household economies and what you could make with your rationed foods. Then in the 50s, we had another cookbook that was more like the party decade, you know, the post-World War, World War II, post-prosperity. And the thought was that if we did a third cookbook, we've got the beginning, the middle, and the current. And just by looking at the things that come out in this cookbook, plus I have a daughter who's a curatorial assistant at the art museum. She did a ton of research for us. You really see the trajectory of how women as a group and as individuals have changed and grown over the last century. So this is another way of looking at the history of our group. And to answer, Dan, what we're going to be doing in the future, pretty much what we're doing now, only better.
I think we should add the name of that cookbook, which is Stirring the Pot in the Kitchen and the Community.
That's a great name.
That's what we do. That is what we do, Stir the Pot.
Susan, Dot, Janet, and Dan, thanks so much for joining us this afternoon. Woman City Club President Susan Noonan, past President Dot Christensen, club member Janet Buning, and Dan Hurley, local historian with the Cincinnati USA Regional Chamber. After the break, a look at how high-tech is driving the automotive industry, and a 911 app that could save you in a medical emergency. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU.